KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, we talk with San Francisco Muni Chief Nathaniel Ford all about double-decker buses, a fresh management team, and Proposition A. And we'll ask questions about why Muni isn't on time, and what about those problem drivers, and why in budget cutback times has Muni's budget increased? And now we're all about Muni after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. San Francisco Muni, the Municipal Transportation Agency, has a fleet of buses, streetcars, and cable cars and makes some 700,000 trips a day. Few things in the city of San Francisco have engendered as much controversy as Muni, a major political issue for as many years as this interviewer can remember. And the present head of Muni is Nathaniel Ford, who came here from Atlanta in 2006. Before that, he was with BART for 5 years as Assistant Chief Transportation Officer, and he's coming up on his second year as a man in charge of Muni, and we welcome him to this hour forum. Good morning to you.
All right. Good morning. Thank you, Mike.
Glad to have you. Well, let's talk first about what's getting the most press here. I mean, we're going to get into all the problems and visionary things that you have for the future of Muni, but the double-decker buses are out there. They're kind of on a trial journey now. What do we know at this point?
Well, the early indications are riders. They love them, and we're going to have to continue with this pilot, and it'll conclude on January 8th, and we're very excited about it, and it is part of that new vision for Muni.
More seats, but they say the time slows down, and access is difficult, particularly if you're handicapped.
Well, in terms of the disabled accessibility on the first level of the bus, there's availability for our disabled customers. But in terms of the vehicle we actually have out there, that's a prototype vehicle. The vehicle that we would look at in the future would probably have more doors, more staircases. So right now it's just a demo, and that's not the final product, if that is the final product.
So the likelihood is we're going to see more double-decker buses. It's going to be like England, or?
Well, not exactly, but it's part of our examination for the Muni vehicles of the future. Part of our transit effectiveness project study was to start looking at new vehicles that we would introduce in the next 10 to 20 years, and we need to start planning now for the future.
There are other new vehicles that we should know about?
Well, we're also looking at bus rapid transit type vehicles, vehicles that could be used as part of the Van Ness, Geary BRT projects, bus rapid transit projects. And these are much larger buses, and they are set up to operate more like a rail vehicle.
Talking to Nat Ford, the head of Muni, the other thing that's been getting a lot of attention lately in terms of ink in the press is pay and budget. And I want to get you on record on this because there's been cutting all over in terms of San Francisco budgets, but not the Muni budget. And the Muni budget is, well, it's gone from, what, $605.5 million to $680, and a lot of criticism about that, as well as criticism of you're getting, I guess, what amounts to a considerable bonus. Many say well-deserved, but many say, why is Ford getting the bonus?
Well, there is always that challenge when you talk about financials and a public transit operation. And the MTA is a very large organization. And one of the things I recognized very clearly when I walked in the door was what I could a pattern of underinvestment in the system. When we look at our infrastructure, our vehicles, in fact, you know, I anecdotally tell people that when I walked in the door, we were actually taking a purchase of used 12-year-old buses for a city that projects itself as a transit-first city. And that was an indication that this system was not able to go financially and purchase new vehicles. But be that as it may, you know, when we start looking at numbers and investment in a system, I think it's not very clear what are the drivers of cost for our system. We have built-in agreements with our unions that automatically lay in raises, 3% raise in terms of that time frame. The opening of the new T3rd line added additional costs. So there's a host of things that are behind those numbers that sometimes may not be clear in a newspaper article.
Including the number of employees that have gone up?
Right. Well, the number of employees have basically stayed flat. My predecessor...
You have more managers now, though.
Well, see, that's the clarification that I think I need to make. In terms of managers, the Muni budget is the same budget that it's been for the last few years. What actually happened, that Muni was under a hiring freeze for a few years, and that was for everything from operators, mechanics, on up to managers, as well as vacant positions. So what we've done is filled vacant positions that were already in the Muni budget. And I think that's the clarification that needs to be made. There was not additional people. And at this day, as we speak to this day, we have close to 200 plus vacancies in an organization. So we're just managing to our budget.
Well, you're also talking about the need for more revenue, and Proposition A, of course, is going to pump in $26 million, but you've got Mayor Newsom saying you need 100 or 150 million more. Where are you going to generate revenue? I mean, I've been reading about this bus shelter and advertising.
Yes.
That's at least one source.
Well, one thing that I talked about when I joined the organization is to really look at our assets, what we currently have within our control as an agency to generate revenue. Transit shelters was a great example of that. That first budget that I looked at, I was shocked to find that our revenue for transit advertisement related to transit shelters was $400,000 a year. In my previous experience, it's literally in the millions of dollars a year for a metropolitan city. So when we talk about, again, staffing and managers. In this particular case, we staffed managers that would aggressively go and look at those opportunities to increase revenues for the agency, and that resulted with the transit shelter contract, a contract over the next 20 years that will bring in $12 million to $15 million a year. Also, in terms of revenue, fortunately, Mayor Newsom had the foresight to start this early, and a Blue Ribbon panel, which will conclude its work in the next couple of months, a Blue Ribbon panel is examining our financial situation and looking at opportunity to increase revenues.
Is this a transit effectiveness project?
You've got a couple of things going on. You have the transit effectiveness project, which is looking at our operating rules and procedures in our network in terms of where routes are originating and ending and the route structure. And then you also have the revenue panel that is looking at creative ways to increase our revenues. The $100 to $150 million structural deficit is correct. It is seen every day on the streets in terms of our infrastructure. It's seen in our tunnels, our track. Our vehicles are in dire need of rehabilitation, our fare boxes and fare collection systems. So
maintenance costs are sky high.
Well, the thing about it is, in terms of maintenance costs, I think we've underinvested in maintenance for quite some time. And we're a very people-driven organization. 75% of our costs are related to actual salaries. And the remaining 25% of our budget is used to band-aid together the system in some way. So when we start looking at additional revenue, it's going to go into maintenance. It's going to go in infrastructure. It's going to go into new vehicles like double-decker buses, and that will make the biggest impact in terms of the quality of service.
Talking to Nat Ford, Executive Director and CEO of the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency. Let's talk about service, because Proposition E was supposed to get up to about 85% in terms of performance rate. That was passed back in 1999, and that was the mandate. We're, I think, close to 70% now.
Right. We're averaging today at 70%, but interestingly enough, just before we opened up the T3rd line, we were starting to make some aggressive strides. We were literally up to about 72%, 73% in terms of on-time performance. Everyone is well aware of the challenges we face with the T3rd line, and again, goes back to infrastructure. Our rail control center, our nerve center for our operation, is working on 1960s technology, and Rachel Gordon of the Chronicle a few months ago published an article, front page article, about that, and there are similar types of challenges for the agency. I believe the 70% on-time performance figure has been, I guess we've been locked in at that for about 4 or 5 years now. I'm somewhat surprised that that the 70% was able to be held considering the number of operators and mechanics we weren't hiring for the last 2 years. So we sort of did more with less and were able to sort of maintain things. And recently we've done a great deal of hiring on frontline employees, over 200 operators, over 130 crafts persons and maintenance personnel. And we think we're going to start seeing some incremental growth immediately in impact in terms of on-time reform. So we're very optimistic. 85% is going to be a challenge. And some of the capital programs and infrastructure issues I mentioned earlier, they'll have an impact, but they take longer to sort of implement.
What are we doing about the drivers? Always complaints coming in about, well, what some would say were the bad apples behind the wheel, or just those who have caused concern among passengers and have been problems one way or another. You've got some difficulties in terms of the union making it, I suppose, very difficult sometimes, challenging.
Well, the union has their role. Their role is to represent their employees, and quite often they're in the position to represent people regardless of the incident or issue that's at hand. However, my management team, what we've decided to do is focus on that 10%, to really concentrate on those 10% as it relates to passenger complaints, accidents, and absenteeism. We've made significant progress as it relates to absenteeism. We've literally almost cut in half the absenteeism utilization.
How have you done that?
Well, what we've done is focused on those individuals that seem to have a problem coming to work.
You mean press charges?
Yes, exactly. Press charges in terms of infractions, but with a very microscopic focus. So every week, I personally receive a report on what we would call our top 10 high-profile operators as it relates to accidents, passenger complaints, and attendance. And then my responsibility, along with my managers, and we talk about managers again, is to hold them accountable to make sure that we follow up religiously in terms of following up with these individuals, either providing them training, discipline, counseling, whatever it needs to take to improve their performance. And we've gotten some good results, primarily in the area of absenteeism. We still have some work to do as it relates to customer service,
courtesy and things like that.
Well, it's, you know, it's a difficult, challenging environment for operators, and the vast majority of our operators, and I receive compliments too, the vast majority of our operators are doing a fine job in a very challenging environment. But we do have the 10% that draw most of our attention, and we are working aggressively to try and manage their behavior.
What are you doing about fare evasion?
On fare evasion, one, you know, you mentioned the budget creep or the increase in budget that we had. That particular year, we proposed to hire about 56 additional proof of payment officers to be on our vehicles and do enforcement. Unfortunately, we weren't able to hire at that rate. You know, I learned a lesson in that in terms of just the process to hire individuals in through the civil service process takes a bit longer. We were able to hire in that first year approximately 14 additional proof of payment officers, doubling it from 14. So we had 28 at the end of this last year, and now we're approaching, I believe, somewhere around 45 proof of payment officers. They are out there on our vehicles, and in the early part of next year, we're going to start putting them on our buses. So they're primarily on our rail right now, and then we'll start looking at buses as it relates to cable car, which has been an issue. We opened up the revenue booths at all of our cable car terminals, so a great deal of fares that are being purchased at the end of the cable car turnarounds, and we've seen some increase, 11% increase in cable car revenue. So we feel good. We feel we're heading in the right direction in terms of fare evasion.
Feel you're on the right tracks, so to speak. We're with Nat Ford, by the way, and I'm going to open the phone lines here a bit early because I know whenever we have had a muni on, there are a lot of questions and a lot of concerns that listeners have. As I said, you know, from my experience being behind the microphone here, it remains and continues to be one of the great concerns among those particularly who use public transit, but also those who don't and who want to feel that public transit is operating in ways that best serve the environment and best serve the city and its interests. You can join us now toll-free, 866-733-6786 is the number to call. Again, the toll-free number for your calls if you have questions or comments for Nathaniel Ford. Nat Ford, Executive Director and CEO of Muni, is 866-733-6786. You can also, of course, send an email, and the email address here is forum@kqed.org. We welcome your emails as well and try to get as many of you on as we can, so call now. Let's talk a bit about traffic and parking, though, before I go to calls and emails, because a lot of people forget that that's under your aegis and a very, very important part of what you do.
Well, it's interesting in terms of the MTA. We are a unique organization. We are not just a transit operation. We are also responsible for pedestrian access, bikes, parking and traffic, and within the next 6 months, depending on the Board of Supervisors and their action, there's a plan to also merge the taxis into our operation.
That would be by July.
Yeah, July 1st of 2008. So we have a very diverse operation, but that's what attracted me to this position from Atlanta was the diversity of the MTA and being able to have all of the pieces of the transportation puzzle under one umbrella. I think we're able to better serve everyone, not just transit users versus parker automobile users and people who need parking and traffic needs, but also to balance out bikes and pedestrians. So it's exciting, very exciting.
It's a big empire that you have there, though.
A very challenging operation.
We're going to go to our callers, and Claudette is our first caller, wants to ask about a very serious concern that many have, security on buses. Hi, Claudette.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having the show.
Good morning.
Two quick issues, and you're doing a wonderful job, by the way. Both of you, Mr. Krasny and Mr. Ford. One issue is security on the buses. I don't think the drivers can do their job if they have to also be police officers for not only rowdy younger people, but also adults who may not be behaving as civilly as we would like them to. And the second question is, have you considered the option of keeping buses flowing as opposed to a strict time schedule? It seems to me that the time schedule, meeting a time schedule with the traffic and congestion and other things that affect buses in the city, is kind of useless. I mean, keeping a time schedule is one thing, but having a bus there at some regular interval would be much more productive. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right, Claudette, thank you for the call. Let's talk about security first.
Very good questions. In terms of the security issue, she's 100% right. Quite often we hear about the situation, the just quality of security on the Muni system. And we do have some serious concerns in terms of, I guess, youth and adults who are improperly behaving. And we don't hear about sometimes the assaults that occur on bus operators. I think we heard earlier last year about assaults on parking control officers. Similarly, we have that issue in terms of assaults with our bus operators. We have numerous programs. We with the San Francisco Police Department, we have a detail that's assigned to our system along with what we call our MTAP group, which there's a group of individuals we use to particularly work with the high schools and make sure that high school children aren't getting into altercations on specific school-related routes. So we're not all the way there. I mean, we would like zero incidents. And again, that is some of the increase in terms of budget, is to increase the number of security officers. So we've increased the number of proof of payment officers. We've also increased the work order we have with the San Francisco Police Department. Again, until we get to zero incidents, we're not 100% there.
Excuse me, before we go on and talk about time schedules, it's not exactly a security issue, but I know there's been a lot of concern over the years about graffiti and about messes left on buses and, you know, just garbage and that sort of thing.
Exactly. We carry 700,000 people a day. And it shows in terms of, trash and things of that nature. We began a process of in-service cleaning, particularly at Embarcadero. When the trains come in inbound, we have personnel on the platform now to start sweeping out the trains. So when they go back in service, they're cleaned out. Similarly, setting up a program with our bus operation. So when buses lay over, we'll be able to do the same type of work. But if you don't have the staff to perform those functions, it really degrades the quality of the system. And we're making those types of investments. As it relates to schedules and safety, the transit effectiveness study has identified that our schedules are really not realistic. Part of the reason that we're doing the study is that the holistic evaluation of travel patterns and congestion hadn't been done in some time. And we're really taking a good hard look with that through technology in terms of actual realistic travel times. On our routes where we have headways of less than 5 minutes, maybe in some cases down to about 3 minutes, she's right. It probably is more important to focus on headway adherence and making sure we have the number of buses to provide that headway versus having creating safety incidents by having operators trying to maintain a schedule that One day it may be a certain time frame, another day another time frame to travel the same distance. However, when we have routes that we're looking at headways greater than 5 minutes, 10, 15, maybe 20 to 30 minutes, there should be a set schedule because we want our customers to be able to know exactly when their bus is hitting that location, and this study is pointing us, heading us in that direction.
And we'll head in the direction of more calls here. We'll go to Danville. Emily, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Hi.
Hi, Emily.
So I was wondering if San Francisco, specifically for the buses, has taken a look at the city and Brazil, Curitiba, what they've done with their public transportation in manners of efficiency, where I think the main thing that they've done to improve it is they made these elevated platforms that you would walk up the ramp and pay your fare first. So if you were in a wheelchair, you could wheel up and then wheel right onto the bus as opposed to the lift for
Excellent question, and that is exactly what we're examining for the Van Ness Avenue and Geary Boulevard corridors. We're in the midst of a preliminary engineering study to implement what is called bus rapid transit, and what that is simply is the benefits that you see in most rail operations, the dedicated right-of-way where you have no interference from automobiles, the high-level boarding platforms, or for that matter, low-floor boarding platforms, platforms that allow people to pay their fare before they get on the vehicle, vehicles with multiple doors, limited stops, and really, basically, it is a rail operation. It operates much like rail at a much lower cost, and we are in the midst of studying that right now, and I'm very confident that the Van Ness and Geary corridors literally rival some of the rail lines across this nation in terms of ridership and is the right solution for now, and then in decades to come, a rail solution may be possible.
Let me thank Emily for her call. It brings up another question. You know, you got Mayor Giuliani now, former Mayor Giuliani, campaigning for the presidency, talking about New York to Mayor Newsom as secure streets and an example of clean streets. And we ought to, in fact, use it as a model here in San Francisco, was kind of what Rudy Giuliani was suggesting. What about transportation? I mean, one often hears Portland. What city is really doing it well, efficiently, and almost as a perfect paradigm or as close as you can get to that? Is there?
Well, you know, I've worked in New York. I've worked at BART. I've worked in Atlanta and here in San Francisco. We're not at the 85% on-time performance goal that has been set by our riders and by our citizens. But
who is? What city is?
Well, the thing is, quite often it's comparing apples to oranges. In terms of our system here, we have 700,000 riders every day of a population of almost 700,000. So as per capita, goes and productivity goes, we're probably the most productive next to New York in terms of the actual number of people we carry on a daily basis as a part of population. So you start looking at these comparisons. If you look at the Atlanta system, you're looking at a system that's covering 750 square miles versus San Francisco with 49 square miles, but a great deal more ridership than the Atlanta system. So no one has it perfect at this point. I think we all have our pluses and minuses, and it all depends on how you were designed and developed. We're a 100-year-old system, and we've been doing this quite some time, and I think we do a great job at it.
Nat Ford is with us this hour, and he will continue answering your questions. We'll take your calls and emails. Again, you can call us at 866-733-6786 when a line becomes available, or send an email. Our email address is forum@kqed.org. He's Executive Director and CEO of MUNI, the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour with Nat Ford, Executive Director and CEO of MUNI, the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, and just talking off air about something that certainly is important to those of you who are environmental minded. We're talking about how do you get more people on buses, and some of the challenges are with boarding, but we're also talking about the biodiesel program, and up to 100% now. I mean, I remember when that was a little bit of a dream.
Right. Under our leadership with the mayor of San Francisco, Mayor Newsom, he issued a goal of January 2008 for all of the diesel fleet in the city to begin operations on the biodiesel, to fuel by biodiesel. And we were able to complete that task about a month ago. So we were ahead of schedule, and 100% of the Muni diesel fleet, which is a small, relatively small fleet compared to the rest of our fleet, the diesel bus fleet, is operating on B20 biodiesel. And I say a small fleet in terms of the diesel because I'd like to point out the fact that we have one of the cleanest fleets in the country with our electric trolley buses and our cable cars and streetcars and LRVs. So we tout ourselves as being one of the cleanest, if not the cleanest, fleet in America.
What can you do to increase those who are making trips by public transportation? It's another thing that environmentalists are obviously concerned with. They'd like to pack you even, you know, much more beyond your capacity if they could and have less cars out there. But it's difficult. Part of it's the boarding time, as you were saying, but part of it's also feeling secure and clean and all those sorts of things we've been talking about.
Well, clearly, we are taking a back-to-basics approach. One, making sure that our vehicles are reliable. So that's investment in maintenance and investment in purchasing vehicles and replacing our vehicles at the right time. Two, to look at what can we do to improve the aesthetics of the vehicle in terms of cleanliness and seating space and things of that nature, and making an effort to clean every vehicle religiously every night without fail. In terms of just customer service, working with the unions, working with our operators, focusing on those bad apples, we have opportunities to increase ridership, clearly. But you have to start with reliability. You have to start with the basics and building trust. And we do very good. I mean, I think when you talk about the All-Star Game and you talk about some of these special events that almost every weekend we have here in San Francisco, people use Muni, and we do a good job. I think during the week we have our challenges, and we're working our way through them, but we're building trust, and it'll take some time, but I think we're well on the way.
Well, this may be a little out of your bailiwick. It gets into political questions, but the question always used to come up, why not? Why doesn't the city subsidize and have Muni ride for free? And that would certainly increase passengers.
Well, there is an examination of that going on. I think that report will be completed in another month or two, an examination of what would it take to have a free Muni. Right now, the investment that we're making in terms of the system and the number of vehicles we have and the infrastructure to support the maintenance, it's at capacity right now. So we would have to increase capacity because we would expect a great deal more ridership overnight. So that's one of the aspects, and there's some others, but it's something that needs to be examined so people can finally put that question to rest.
And we'll get more of your comments and questions. Tim, join us. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, both of you. I am a city since 1991 when I moved out here. And now, I've been seeing this, this Muni thing for almost, 17 years. And what I am now is I'm a cyclist. I'm a member of the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. I'm glad that, I support them. I'm glad they have some governmental power. They have a seat on the MTA. I support Aaron Peskin greatly. I think he should run Muni. I think we should have a local person who feels the pain and instead of some national director from Atlanta. I mean, how can Atlanta recommend? That's a city of sprawl. We are a city that, should be more like Amsterdam or, say, Copenhagen, instead of, L.A. or Atlanta. I mean, there's many issues, but, I just can't believe yesterday Newsom's in the news for green building codes, green city this. This fleet is in no way green, trust me. Thank you.
All right, we thank you. I don't think Aaron Peskin's seeking your job now, just to maybe relieve whatever anxiety might have been aroused by that call. But, you think you can stand behind a green fleet here? I mean, this caller essentially was challenging that as well.
I think it's pretty clear that our fleet is one of the greenest fleets in the country, and the recent addition of B20 diesel fuel to our fleet, as well as the 86 hybrid electric buses we introduced earlier this year back in the spring. 86 additional replacement vehicles, replacing some of our older diesel buses, and then on top of that going to B20 as a fuel, it clearly places us far ahead of any of our peers nationally.
What about what the caller said about being more like Copenhagen or Amsterdam?
A sprawl city. Exactly. I hear those types of comments in terms of comparing this city to other cities and transportation in those cities versus San Francisco. We are a product of our history. We're a product of what the citizens have wanted for this city in terms of transportation. I think we can aspire to be similar in to those European cities where you have even greater transportation use. And I think that's a great goal. So let's lay the plan out to get us there, and I'm all for it.
Patrick, you're our next caller. Welcome.
Hi, great conversation. Thanks for being on. I just had a question about the employees that you hire to ensure that the riders pay their fares. I was wondering if they were cost-effective or whether they're hired short-term to make sure that riders are aware that they're being watched to pay their fare.
That's a very good question. In fact, when we made the proposal to increase the number of proof of payment officers, that was the first question. You know, will it result in payback in terms of salaries? It's very close, and it's a little hard to determine. But one thing we are seeing an increase in terms of our revenues, in terms of fare revenues across the system. So there has been a direct return in terms of their involvement and their deployment. In addition to that, though, I think there's also a security answer or a customer service answer that I need to embellish on. I think having more eyes and ears, particularly uniformed eyes and ears on the system, has an additional benefit. The proof of payment officers, obviously, their primary function is to make sure people pay their fares, but they're also there to answer questions for directions, to also be a deterrent for misbehavior and things of that nature on our vehicle. So there's some additional benefits that are hard to quantify. But initially, we are seeing additional revenue, additional fares coming in. On our sheets.
Let me thank the caller and go to some of your emails here. Here's J.H. who says, I could tolerate the chronic delays in Muni service if I knew when a bus or trolley was expected to show up at my stop, but this is currently possible only on those vehicles which are part of the new next bus system. Mystifies me why Muni is taking so long to fully deploy this system. It would cost a fraction of the money which Muni is proposing to spend on the ridiculous Chinatown metro expansion, and it would probably benefit 10 times as many riders.
Well, another great question, and we've heard an interesting thing. The next Muni system that was deployed, initially it was a pilot program to deploy that system and test it out. We have since fully gone into production with that system. We've added hundreds of additional enunciators throughout the system. However, in the next bus shelter contract, or the current shelter contract that we were talking about earlier, in that contract is a requirement for every bus shelter to be outfitted with Next Muni. So in addition to the revenues, we're picking up the new shelters with Next Muni technology in every shelter. So there's going to be more Next Bus, Next Muni. We call it Next Muni because it's not just for the buses. It's also for the rail lines. And we're excited about that. There will be more of that program.
Here's a listener who sends this by iPhone. The 37 line has a hybrid bus. How much more efficient is it? What I like most. So much quieter. Good for me as my bedroom faces the street. If only Harley made a hybrid motorcycle, I could really sleep. Running SF Muni must be one of the hardest jobs in public service. You couldn't pay me enough. What about the hybrid buses?
Thank you for that question. on the hybrid buses, we purchased 86 of those buses, 56 40-foot buses, and then for the smaller neighborhoods, 56 40-foot and 30-foot buses, and they are quieter because at certain points they actually are running off the electric drive on the buses. The diesel motor is just to run a generator that eventually turns the power into electricity and moves the vehicle quietly. They have the same power utilization. They use a lot less fuel, and their emissions are obviously much less. So we're excited about the hybrid buses, and we are planning in any future purchases as a interim step to continue with hybrid electrics until we can get to the point where we're at zero emissions.
Talking with Nat Ford again, who's executive director and CEO of Muni. And here's Graham in San Francisco, says, in Europe, many trams and buses have a turnstile on the rear exit to prevent fare evasion. Why not adopt that model, which would save the need to hire fee inspectors and eliminate far more evasion?
Well, we're taking a larger look at all of our fare collection. We're currently part of the TransLink program, which is the regional card that'll be a smart card. But at the same time, we have to look at Muni's future in terms of fare collection and make, a very hard policy decision. In the next few months, we're going to do a pilot on all-door boarding. With that, the challenge is, in terms of collecting fares, our system is slowing down because of the number of people that we need to get through that front door to pay a fare. Either through TransLink or some other mechanism, we need to examine all-door boarding to allow people to get on and off, and then to spot check with proof of payment officers to make sure people are paying their fare. But for a system with this density and to make it faster, we have to look at some other alternatives.
Well, we're going to go to more of your emails in a moment, but first more calls. And Josh joining us from up in Portland, Oregon. Good morning, Josh.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had lived in San Francisco for about 6 years and just recently moved to Portland, and I rode the Muni all the time. And I ride the buses here now, and they have a system where you can call in and enter a stop ID number, and it'll tell you when the next bus is coming. And I think it's really great because, you know, I don't leave my house until I know when the bus is going to come. And while the next Muni thing was cool, you still get to the stop and wait. And I was just wondering if anything like that is going to be implemented. So I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank All you. Right. We thank you, Josh.
Good question. The next Muni system does have the capability to provide you online and PDA information. So that has developed to that point. So we're able to provide you that information on the spot. So if you're in your office, you'll know when the next vehicle's coming online and be able to go downstairs or wherever you need to go to pick up that vehicle.
Seems like a natural progression.
Yeah, it's natural progression.
And Demott is our next caller. Demott, you're on.
Good morning, Michael. This is Dermot in San Francisco.
Dermot, excuse me.
My congratulations, first of all, to Director Ford for the initiative and the dedication he's showing. It's a tough row to hoe, all things considered. I am a particular admirer of the efficiency with which our parking control officers operate. I just never cease to be amazed at the efficiency shown by them, ruthless efficiency, you might call it. So I was wondering if we could possibly kill two birds with one stone by possibly melding the efficiency levels of the two organizations, possibly using some of the parking control energy to inject it into Muni. But secondly, on a more serious note, and this may have been addressed, would it be possible or would it be viable to adjust the schedules to reflect the reality? That way we'd be operating at 100%. It would inject an element of predictability into the system, and it might solve a number of problems while purporting to have the glass half full rather than half empty. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that.
Dermot, that was a great question, and that's the whole idea behind this transit effectiveness study. And it goes very deep in terms of just examining the realities in terms of our schedule, the street designs and constraints. And earlier this year, we did the number one California pilot almost a year ago, and we really took a hard look at the running time, you know, the end-to-end running time for that route and certain intersections and changes that have occurred over, I guess, two decades in terms of people's travel patterns and businesses that have set up along that corridor that weren't there 10 years ago. And for a city with, in our case, almost 150 different routes, we're going to lay out all of the recommendations and then develop a strategy to start marching through route by route, corridor by corridor to make those improvements. We've got to do it in a very systematic way, in a very orderly way, because of the complexity of our system. But the question was a great question, and I think we're well on our way to do that. I mean, it's going to be a very heavy lift, a very complicated process. We are going to need to make changes on a system that has been designed almost 25 years ago and is essentially the same system in design with no major adjustments over the years. So we're very excited about this new program, and we're going to need everyone's help and patience as we implement it.
Well, there's no lack of suggestions from our listeners in terms of things you can do. Here's a listener who says, I love and use public transit all over the Bay, but nothing is more irksome than having to come up with coins for Muni, not having clerks at the turnstiles, no elevators for people with strollers, heavy bags, wheelchairs. Half the time they're out of order because homeless people have urinated in them or some other unknown reason. Not being able to get help. The transit store in the Civic Center is only for SamTrans and BART. They do not know Muni and misdirect people all the time. More buses, yes. Double deck, yes. But please start with the essentials.
And again, back to basics. You know, the hiring freeze that I guess went into effect in 2004 due to the downturn in the economy, it has ripple effects that will carry out for years. When again, when I walked in the door, literally hundreds of vacant positions, and no one was programmed or really ready to start gearing up and hiring those people. And fortunately, we were able to do that with a sense of urgency. We've been able to bring a great deal more people on board in terms of mechanics, maintenance personnel, cleaners, supervisors, and we're well on our way. But again, the city is facing some financial challenges. Mayor Newsom announced that a few weeks ago, and we're going to have to find a way to do more with less and tighten our belt. But you've got to have those frontline employees, and you've got to take care of the basics. And it's pretty simple.
Now, some more about basics. Here's David, who says AC Transit in East Bay has fare boxes that deduct ride fare from tickets. On Muni, numerous drivers just wave people on, either because of favoritism, indifference, or to keep the bus moving. Muni needs to get rid of transfers and switch to more tamper-proof fare collection. Fares versus boarding needs to be radioed in as riders board and pay or don't pay. This would reduce the need for drivers to be involved in the fare collection so much. And he goes on to say, tagging on our new buses is deplorable. Forget fare enforcers on the buses. Put armed, taser and mace, plainclothes enforcers on power to arrest. Too many riders are afraid to speak up or speak out. Most drivers fear retaliation. And so few are bold enough to eject taggers. Even so, the drivers cannot detain or arrest. Enhance your security. And he says about taxis, they should be digitally aware of buses so those whose neighborhoods don't have direct bus service can hybridize their commute home and still enable taxis to take fares. And finally, too many people still board via middle and back doors. You obviously don't take seriously your own warning signals. I have yet to see fare enforcers actually on the buses. Mm-hmm. Are you getting all these?
Well, in terms of fare inspectors, the proof of payment officers, we do not have them on our buses at this point. And while there are a certain number of individuals who are fare evading, clearly, there are some individuals who are boarding those back doors who have bought a fast pass, but they're boarding through the back door because everyone going through the front door actually slows the system down. So, again, we'll have to change our paradigm on this and start looking at what would be a system that I think we had an earlier caller who was talking about bus rapid transit. One of the main tenets is all-door boarding, similar to what we do on our rail operation, and you take fares in a different fashion. We need to start examining how we can move the system faster, and backdoor boarding or all-door boarding is something we'll have to examine. It is not legal at this point. It's not something that we are supposed to be condoning, but it is a reality that we're dealing with today.
Give you one other caller's suggestions here, which you may not like, but I'm curious to get your response. This is from Chris, who says, I have a great idea how to get Muni budget back on track. How about no more raises for executives? See recent raise for the director. The director of Muni makes $300,000 a year, which is slightly less than their entire advertising revenue. In fact, while most people struggle with making a fair wage, paying rent and paying for transportation, they still do not have a reliable service. On-time average is about 60%. Actually, you're wrong about that, Chris. It's closer to 70. But anyway, does the director struggle with rent, transportation costs? Does he ride Muni ever? I think the changes need to start from the top down and not from the bottom up, like raising fares. It appears there is no we in Muni when it comes to contributions.
I think in terms of my answer to that, transit directors, be it general managers or executive directors across this country, I think there's a recognition of the challenge in recruitment. I think there's a recognition for the difficulty of the jobs or the complexity of the jobs. And in terms of my compensation, that was something that was negotiated with the MTA board about 2 years ago when I was recruited from Atlanta.
Let me just say in your defense, by the way, that the CEOs in the private sector make a hell of a lot more than you do. I mean, on the average, you're talking about a $300,000 salary. It's the highest. You're the highest paid city employee, period. I mean, nobody rivals you. But the fact is, you're talking about the private sector, the corporate sector, people make, especially with the perquisites that go with their salaries, a lot more than you do.
That's true. And I think, though, in my particular case, I have a commitment to public transit. I have a commitment for public service. And in terms of compensation, that's something that the MTA board, after doing evaluation of my performance over the last 18 months, in fact, I was entitled to some raise or, I guess, a bonus 6 months in.
Well, there's been some controversy about whether the bonus should have come later rather than now, though, I'm sure you're aware.
I mean, and, you know, that's something that I think the MTA board, after they did their evaluation and looked at comparable systems and compensation across this country, they made their decision. So I don't determine my compensation. That's determined by the MTA board.
And we're going to determine to have some more. We're determined to have some more calls here. Peter, you're on. Good morning.
The Muni is an excellent system in many respects, including coverage, but there are a number of points that really are kind of insults to passengers and that make one feel pretty bad. For example, coordination of transfer points is often not good. A north-south vehicle you get off of, and you're trying to transfer onto something that goes east-west, and it just takes off without you, and it's another 20 minutes till the next one comes. Places like Geary and Van Ness have Muni boarding bubbles that are halfway down the block, so if you want to transfer from one to the other on these very frequently used lines, you got to go half a block to the corner and another half a block to the other bubble, and you might miss a bus that way as well. Next Muni has definitely got errors. The online and PDA service, ought to remember that the mayor has said 40% of San Franciscans do not have internet access, and so I'd recommend you consider telephone access. And whatever happened to the payphones? And what happened to 673 Muni, which is now 311, but the 673 Muni people really, really were knowledgeable in the system, and the 311 people are not in the same way.
Okay, raised some great points. In terms of the coordination and transfer elements of our operation, you are right. We are looking at that in terms of the transit effectiveness study and the Geary-Van Ness corridor, Geary-Van Ness intersection is the largest transfer point in the system. We are examining that now in terms of bus stop location and coordination of schedules. Again, we're working on that, and it wouldn't happen soon enough for me to be satisfied, but we're in the middle of working on that in terms of the coordination issues. In terms of Next Muni, you do have, through 311, the ability to call and get information in terms of real-time arrivals. The creation of 311 did take some of the Muni staff that were working on 673 Muni into the 311 operation. And again, it's a learning curve, but ultimately all city services with 311, it's one-stop calling, and you still will be, and you will be able to get phone information for Muni arrivals.
And we thank you, Peter. Here's another Peter who writes, "Are Muni drivers, DMV, and criminal records a matter of public record? I'm far more afraid of drivers than any other passengers."
No, they are not a matter of public record, unfortunately. And I think to answer the question, unfortunately for the person who's asking the question, we don't provide that information. However, that DMV record is reviewed on a regular basis to make sure that they do not have accidents outside of their operation, outside of our operation, that would impact their daily performance.
On we go to more calls. Laura, thanks for waiting. You're on Forum.
Hi. I would like the speaker to address the issue of late-night riding, and particularly I work two jobs, and my second job is an evening job downtown, and I'm at the end of the line right at the beach, and so I sort of know what the times are that drivers are supposed to leave because I'm at the end of the line, and they typically don't leave on time when I'm expecting them to. And then at the end of the night on my way home, I often wait 40 minutes, you know, at like midnight for a Geary bus or a 31. And it just seems not really that acceptable. I feel like late night riders sort of get the worst end of the deal.
Short stick, huh? Yeah, Nat Ford.
In terms of the operation, you know, we have examined just the level of supervision that we have on the street to monitor these types of things, and we're woefully short in terms of actual supervisors managing the line. We are in the process of hiring supervisors for these aberrations in terms of, you know, a bus is supposed to be leaving at a certain time and time point, and it doesn't happen. And I think largely some of that doesn't happen because, you know, obviously vehicle and operators, and we've been working through that issue with having enough vehicles and operators, and we shouldn't have that problem late at night. But more importantly, supervision of what's going on out in the field. So she raises an excellent point, and I'll make sure when I get back that we start looking at what can be done to ensure at late night when we don't have frequent headways that whatever schedule we're supposed to be running is run without any exceptions.
And thank you, Laura. Let's try to get another caller in here quickly. Michael, that's you. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. You know, I've been a cabbie in the streets of San Francisco 20 years. I drove 4 years in Manhattan, lived 6 years in New York, and I just don't see this city moving people like New York does 24/7. 365 days a year. I mean, in regards to BART, for instance, why do the bars close at 2 a.m. and BART closes at midnight, yet they don't want people to drink and drive? And a vast majority of my clients that get in my taxi are because they're disgruntled about Muni, their efficiency and cross-town service, and especially the wee morning hours and the middle of the night. I think that maybe it sounds far-fetched, but my idea would be to trash the whole system and bore a mini New York Underground.
Well, anyway, there's an idea to vie with. We're at the end of the hour, but a note to end on. Nat Ford, Executive Director, CEO of the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, thank you so much for being with us.
No, thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Appreciate your being here and appreciate your listenership. I'm speaking, of course, directly to our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and hours repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producer, Kevin Guillory, production assistant, Tina Larberg, our intern staff, Gladys Diandoki, Jesse Finfrock, Marco Bell, Ingalisa Schraubsdorf, Karen Song, and June Stinson. Engineer is Danny Bringer. Executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.